Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 244 for November 4th, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we will be talking about the 319th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, you can go to timingresearch.com/reports and you can access either the web or PDF version there. Be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory, because I post all the episodes in an audio-only format as a podcast as well. So today I have arranged for Eric Gebhard, Jake Bernstein, Norman Hallett, and Jim Kenny to be on this episode, and Jim will be moderating again, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Okay, great, and what a group we have here today. Last week was a huge week on the upside for stocks, and be very interesting to see how everybody feels about it this week. We're going to start out by going around the horn and have everybody introduce themselves and talk a little bit about their company. So right off the bat, we're going to go with Eric Gebhard of AltaVest. Eric, could you give a little background on yourself? And again, what's going on at AltaVest?
Sure thing. Let's see. I can start with the beginning. That's always a good place. I've been doing this since 1991 in the futures and options space in particular. And we started AltaVest, my partner and I, in 1997. And we soon adopted, I guess you could say, some unique approaches to trading options, and specifically option spreads using S&P 500 or E-mini index products such as the NASDAQ 100 mini, Russell 2000 mini, and really the primary product is the E-mini S&P 500. So we're trading option spreads in that space. A lot of these are non-directional, and we have an algorithm we developed that helps us select trades and then manage and monitor those trades for risk and profit thresholds. And we use trade alerts, and we have a trade simulator, and so on and so forth as well. So that's primarily what we're doing here at AltaVest.
Great. And later in the broadcast, you'll have an opportunity to go behind the curtain a little bit further on what you're doing so that the viewer or the listener could understand more about what AltaVest will bring to the table.
Sounds good.
Yep. Next up is going to be Norm Hallett. Norm is running the Disciplined Trader, trying to help people with the psychological and other factors that go into trading. Norm, for those who are not aware of yourself, a little background, and again, the Disciplined Trader.
Thanks for having me, Jim. And I'm really all about the mental and emotional issues of trading. I'm on the other half, the dark side of trading, where most people give lip service to traders, but they really don't give much attention to, unless you're, you've fallen a few times and realize that you're your own worst enemy. That's where I come in, to kind of help to support, make you understand that you're not alone, and that the mental and emotional issues are really the most important half of trading. There's a lot of good trading plans around, but the DisciplinedTrader.com started about 15 years ago, and we've been we're pretty much the top organization that helped traders with the mental and emotional issues. About 4 or 5 years ago, we did start a division called the Simple Trading Plans, because we were training people to be traders, to be more disciplined with their trading, and they had lousy trading plans that had no real risk management techniques, etc. So I developed, really gave from my own trading plans, some of the simple things that I do, and so we offer that also. But primarily, we are about the mental and emotional issues. That's where we specialize.
Okay, great. And again, at the end of the broadcast, we'll have more time to get deep into that. Has Jake arrived yet, or not just yet? Well, Jake Bernstein is supposed to join us, and he's of TradeFutures.com. So hopefully, he can join us and enlighten us into some of the things he sees on a seasonal basis, and some of the other, shall we say, mechanisms that he uses to try to make some market direction calls. Right now, we're going to start out with some of the basic questions we have each and every week. And the first one, of course, is from today's opening until Friday's close, what is our expectation for the S&P 500? We're going to go over three different questions on this. Is Jake there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, great, Jake. This is perfect. Yeah. So again, for the people who have been out of circulation and aren't aware of you, what about a little background on Jake Bernstein and what you're doing at TradeFutures.com?
Well, let's see. I've been trading for 52 years. We teach people how to trade, but we're real traders ourselves. I trade practically every day. It's not specifically day trade. It's all what I call fact-backed, rules-based trading, so we don't participate in any interpretation. It's all clear, concise, rule-based, back-tested, statistically based as well. We manage risk. We maximize profit. We have specific entries and exits. We use seasonal patterns and specific time-tested relationships and price and interest and market sentiment, and that's what we do.
Great. And I would like to note that on the seasonal side, last time you were on, which was, well, last time I was with you anyway, a while back, you were saying seasonally that after October 15th, that the market had the possibility of accelerating to the upside. And I was noticing here that on October 15th, the S&P might have been around 2950. And today it's at 3079, making all-time highs. So I did want to tip my hat that that particular assessment was spot on and quite valuable.
Thank you. And it's just the beginning.
Yeah. And also, like I say, it certainly would be wonderful to hear some of your insights into some of the other markets as well. Let's get back over here, though, with the basic questions. And there's three phases to it. So, without going into it too much, the first question is basically, where are you looking for the S&P? We opened at 3078 and change today on the SPX. And where do we think it might close the end of the week? We're going to start out with Eric and get a little idea of what his best guess is.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to go with higher. And I think that as much as there are so many indicators, and no matter what time frame you're looking at, that tend to indicate that we might be overbought, I just do not think anyone should stand in front of this this move right now. And I would be looking for the move to continue higher.
Okay, so higher by the end of the week. Turning over to Norm, what do we have there, Norm, from your perspective?
Yeah, I would reluctantly say higher. I've in the back of my head, I've been waiting for this market to turn around with some authority, and it just has not. And I, you can sit and wait for short signals, or you can do what the market is doing. And so I mean, listen, we broke to new highs. I'm looking for a higher market this week.
Okay, and Jake, what's your perspective?
The path of least resistance from the 28th of October until the 14th of November is higher, but that does not discount the possibility, given the geopolitical backdrop, that we're going to get some big corrections to the downside. But those corrections should be bought. It's a big bull market. It's a Teflon market. Nothing bad is sticking to this market. So if you're willing to take the risk, you're going to be on the long side on corrections to the downside.
Yeah, I mean, we've got interest rates cut over 50, 60% in a year, and the unemployment rate and participation rate, particularly for the spenders, 26 to 55 years old, is very strong. So that's why it's very difficult to badmouth much of anything right now. Okay, let's go over to percentage of confidence. Eric, if you're going to slap a number on your confidence level, where would that be? Eric, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, just we're looking for a confidence number. Yeah. So what kind of number would you fix to your opinion there?
All right, I'm unconfidently going to confidently say 60%.
Yeah, more likely than not. How about you, Norm?
Yeah, I'm sheepishly saying 60%. Also, I am, and I'll give you some reasons why.
Yeah, exactly. We're at the all-time high. We've just had a major run, so I mean, having a little bit of trepidation up here certainly is not unreasonable. Jake, how are you feeling?
I'm not going to be sheepish. I'm going to be clear. I'm going to say I'm willing to risk 10% to make 30% over the next 2 months.
So you're basically feeling like it's a high percentage that we're going to be moving.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Now let's go behind the curtain and find out what the reasonings are here. So, Eric, what's your bullish reasonings at least currently?
I like, the fact that we're well above moving averages, really, depending on just about any time frame you're looking at. I know that we can look at some of the other indicators that are commonly, viewed upon for overbought and oversold signals. And admittedly, a lot of these are in the overbought territory, but a lot of times when those things reach those overbought territories, that's the time to buy. You get some of this acceleration. Also, I'm looking at just the idea that there's a theme, at least in the last month. And if we're looking just a week ahead, I'm just kind of going with recent past, I guess recency bias is what they call it. But I mean, my goodness, every possible dip has just been shallow and met with, I would imagine, algo buying, machine driven buying. And, mm-hmm. I think that dynamic is going to be here for a while. And as Jake mentioned, any corrections are probably likely a good buying opportunity. I know there's also some bullish seasonals. So I look at some other seasonals as well on the S&P that start middle of this month, the last 15 years, we've seen a rally from, I think it's like November 20 or something like that. I'll have to look at that. But nonetheless, that's the tone right now. And, there are always black swan events that can happen, but, you have to give what the market takes you. Or I'm sorry. But yeah,
you got to go with the flow. That's what you got to do.
Take what the market gives you. I don't think I've ever said it that way before.
All yes. Right. Don't fight the tape. Yes. Okay. So some reasonings, Norm, that you think it may be going a bit higher, although it doesn't sound like you know, you're particularly enthused, but you can't.
Well, I'm not enthused because I've been so wrong. So many, you know, I wind up doing nothing because I'm looking for that signal that I think is going to happen. And that's, you know, I don't do it all the time because I've been around long enough to, but in the back of my head is a disappointment. I've been trading other markets, actually, not the,
right.
There's clear indications in other markets for me.
Right.
There's a very clear upward channel in the S&P chart. I'm looking at the December S&P. If you started a trend line connecting the tops in May and the bottoms in June, you've got a very clear uptrend that looks like it may take this market to somewhere, you know, in the 3150 area, kind of 3130, 3150 as a next resistance. I mean, we're at all-time highs. The thing that is encouraging about the long side, I think, is its ability to stay in the strong area when it comes to not overbought, but strong momentum in the RSI area. I think people make the mistake when they read some of these momentum indicators that they look for something to be overbought, when in reality what you're seeing is an indication of a very strong market. And you know, when you're here in the 65, 66, 68 area, and you're hanging around in there, that's a very strong market without being overbought. So I think, you know, the likelihood is higher. But as Jake said, you've always got to be careful because of the political events that are occurring all around us.
Yeah, that VIX has not been a bad indicator. You know, when it gets under 15, it tends to be a bullish situation sometimes. And it broke 15 right around the middle of October. And that's pretty much where we got this last leg from. So as long as that VIX is under 15, it's constructive, in my view, to the market. That wasn't a bad thing to keep an eye on. Jake, behind the curtain here, what are you seeing as far as reasonings and motivating factors? Is it the people that all sold out of their stock? They, you know, public sold out of a bunch of stock. Now they're going to come roaring back in? Or is this just a no-seller environment because nobody wants to go to 2%? Money market, or what do you think?
As you so correctly said, there is no other place right now for money to go. Mm-hmm. So money managers who are under the gun to perform, especially by the end of the quarter to get their 2 and 20 without mm-hmm. losing customers, have to put money into the market. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a bigger issue here, and that is this. If you look at the most important piece of information in terms of predictive validity, which is the so-called commitment of traders report, mm-hmm. you will see that commercial interests, some of the biggest end users and producers in the world, are buying like never before. They're buying cocoa, coffee, sugar, lumber, you name it, they're buying it. It makes perfect sense because they can buy cheap commodities and finance those cheap commodities with cheap money. So right. What you see is a transfer of goods from the weak holders, which are the producers, to the strong holders, which are the commercials, who are going to store the stuff and then sell the stuff as prices go higher. So that adds up to a very bullish scenario in the bigger picture. Over the smaller picture, there's another indicator, and that is pre-Thanksgiving and end of year. Mm-hmm. Almost 73% of the time, stocks have moved higher going into Thanksgiving, and that goes all the way back to the 1800s. So we're looking at numbers, and the numbers are very positive.
Yeah, and the seasonality is quite good as well.
Correct.
All right, well, if we were, before we get into all the different markets, because I'm excited to do that, with regards to some of the indicators that you try to look at in order to come up with decision-making, trades. So, is it anything, you know, what technicals you might look at or what fundamentals you might look at, Eric, you know, that goes into your soup before you, before you make a decision.
Right. Well, we try to keep things pretty simple, and we look at exponential moving averages and, 50, 100, 200 period moving averages on the exponential moving averages. And we'll look at, I think it was Norman had mentioned the RSI. We like looking at the RSI as well. Kind of what I referenced earlier, in the sense that sometimes you look at this RSI as it gets above 60 or you know, a lot of educational outfits and whatnot will teach you to look at that as an overbought kind of signal. But I don't know, it almost seems to work the opposite in that. It just confirms strength. So we try to keep it simple. Then the type of trading we do with our option spreads isn't necessarily relying on precise entry and exit points in the sense that we have, I guess you could say, a lot of wiggle room in these spreads. So we're looking at generalities. We're looking if, you know, if there's a bullish sentiment, for example, you know, you might, you know, sell some spreads. And even if the market moves against you a little bit, you might have theta decay working in your favor. So,
right.
Yeah. And then, you know, one thing too, I was just going to comment, the reason I'm, I guess you could say, cautiously bullish here for this week is, I don't know if anyone looks at the CNN Fear and Greed, that sentiment index, but that thing is pretty strong right now, pretty greedy. So I don't know if you want to look at that, but kind of interesting. I'm looking at the put call ratio on the SIBO is strongly in favor of calls right now. I mean, no one's buying puts,
right.
And kind of a fascinating dynamic right now. And anytime it's been elevated at this level, it doesn't seem to have stayed here very long, at least in the last several years, according to their graph. So just another
good example of that, Eric, was what I've been hearing on Apple, which is that it's bulletproof and that nobody wants to do a call spread because the sky's the limit. And I'm just noticing, you know, it's up almost to 260 and its 200-day average is down at 198. And so the sentiment's getting a little frothy. You say the calls are getting a little frothy. So those are some reasons why, you know, you could throw some short-term cold water on things every once in a while. Norm, you were looking at what type of indicators and fundamental technical stuff before you come up with some ideas?
Well, you know, I take a general view. I've been doing a lot of buying in and selling on a daily basis in some of the markets that that Jake mentioned about a month or two ago on the on this same show,
right.
When talking about how the softs were looking for a rally from a seasonal
right.
standpoint, and they've been a dream really since then. The last couple of weeks, you know, we saw some lows after up until a few weeks ago, and now we're seeing some nice strength in not overly, but still, you know, building a nice case for the middle term in the coffee and the sugar made new highs today. But I think out of all the markets, the cotton is making a long bottoming type of action that looks really good to me. And,
sure.
and so once I identify a market from a general standpoint, then I look for some of the triggers that I like to see. You know, I look for corrective actions in markets that are going higher. And then when they reverse in the way of the trend with some sort of a long tail on a candle followed by some a powerful candle. Those are the kinds of indications that I look for.
On the chart, you know, Mark Sachs, who's sometimes a visitor here, he likes to try to see if the market could come back to its breakout point. And then if it can hold a breakout point, he likes that as sometimes an entry area. So like on the S&P, we've run up here to 3080, broke out above what, about 3025 or so. So if it went back towards that area, would that be of interest to you if it could hold that breakout point?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of these markets are about to run up against the 200-day moving averages in some of these daily charts in the markets that I mentioned, these softs.
Right.
And
all right, well, let's just hear what Jake's got to say on some of the stuff he looks at. And then let's start going around to some of these markets so we can get more specific on what you guys are actually seeing. Because I think Eric is doing a lot of S&P index transactions. And I think you guys are looking a lot more at the commodities. So let's just hear what Jake's got to say about some of his indicators that he loves. And then basically let's go around to some of the markets you guys are actually focusing on.
My turn.
Yep. Yep.
There's really only one regret I have in my career. That is it. Excuse me, that I didn't learn options. Hold on a second, guys. I wish I had learned options better. Options is really the way to go, especially if you want to limit risk and define risk extremely well. So
right.
that's one important thing for me, to learn options. But in terms of market sentiment, the small trader is now about 88% bullish. That doesn't mean anything bad for the bigger picture, but for the short term, it does mean a correction. So let's be prepared for that. The other markets that I like are the ones that we've been talking about before, the softs, coffee, cocoa, sugar, and especially platinum. Let's look at platinum because over the next couple of weeks, it's going to break out to the upside and confirm a move that started a couple of weeks ago in an effort to regain the lost ground that it had on gold. So let's look at platinum as well.
Okay, let's go do that in a second. Right before we do that, I wanted to give Eric an opportunity. Eric, you I might be mischaracterizing, but is your focus quite a bit on the indices and the stocks?
Correct. We're looking at the E-mini. That's our primary focus.
And so just to make the novice a little bit more aware of what you're kind of leaning towards is that you're trying to do limited risk credit spreads, and you're trying to do it with a situation where you're kind of following the trend, and but you're also doing it in a situation where you have a margin of error, meaning if the market does many different things, that could be favorable to you, as opposed to if you just bought a call, it has to go up. That's a one direction thing.
Right.
Your strategies have a margin of error that is fairly comfortable for you, and also many things can occur during your trading until maturity that would be favorable to you as well, right?
Right. I think that's a fair assessment. We have a trading window typically of, let's say, 20 to 60 or 70 days, depending on market conditions. And, you know, we're looking at what we like to refer to as higher probability trades. So if anyone can envision an insurance company, how they collect premium, and, you know, we're all familiar with paying our auto insurance and our health insurance and our life insurance premiums. And, you know, you do that in the expectation that you hope you never have to use any of those premiums and put them to work and make a claim. But meanwhile, the insurance company is collecting all those premiums. And once in a while, they make payouts, of course, and they know they will. But in the long run, the probabilities they've calculated will favor them. And that's, I guess, like a casino as well, right? It's kind of a maybe a little bit overused example, but it's probably the most simple example for people to kind of wrap their heads around as to what we're doing. So we basically take the role of the insurance company or the casino as the house, and we're selling options, and they're all covered spreads. These are not naked options. So they have a defined risk before we enter the trade and a maximum profit when we enter the trade as well. And then as time goes by, there's a lot of margin of error, as you say, or wiggle room. And if the market moves up, down, or sideways, generally speaking, those trades are going to do well. Only if you get a really, really strong rally in a short period of time, or a really, really strong decline in a short period of time, where these types of trades come under pressure. So typically the trades we place have about a 90% probability of working out in our favor. And that's not to say, you know, you're going to make, you know, 90% winners. But nonetheless, that's when
To clear that up, you have a software system or some type of technical mechanism that gives a probability shootout. And obviously, that's all it is a theoretical probability shootout. You wouldn't, refer to it as some kind of some kind of an assurance of any type.
Yeah, no guarantee. And more specifically, just to kind of reveal some of the, it's not really even a secret. We tell people about it, and it's not really anything that's too profound. But we're looking at the deltas as a large part of what we're doing with selling premium. So if there's a delta of, let's say, 10% on an option, that means it has a 90% probability of expiring out of the money. Mm-hmm. So we'll look to sell an option like that and then cover it with some what we call an insurance option, just to ensure that position against unlimited loss.
Yeah, and you're doing due diligence to try to put your client in the best possible position through through research and doing a lot of homework.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys, Jake and Norm, do you want to go right into the soft sector of the commodities? Your cotton, your coffee, your cocoa, and sugar, that kind of stuff?
I think I'm going to leave that to Jake, and I'll cover something I've been zooming in on, the Japanese yen.
Yeah, Jake, do you have anything you want to talk about in the softs that you think deserves a quick look?
Yep. Absolutely. I mentioned about a month ago that we're looking at coffee as a big move to the upside, not just because the cyclical behavior of coffee is due for a low, but because of the fact that you've got record high commercial buying in coffee futures. So who are these commercials? Of course, there's Starbucks and some of the other end users, which has allowed Starbucks to make a lot of money by buying their commodities cheap, including cocoa, coffee, sugar, and milk. You can believe it or not, milk is traded as a futures market, which has been a very significant contributor to their low bottom line cost. At the meantime, they're not lowering price at the retail level. So it's a beautiful situation, not a win-win situation for the consumer, but certainly a win situation for Starbucks. And that's going to continue. When you look look at the commitment of traders report, commercials, the end users, the producers, you're asking the question, how much are they buying? The fact that these commercials have been buying collectively more coffee futures than ever before, the leading indicator of a big move longer term to the upside. Similar situation developed in cocoa. You can see that particular commercial interest in cocoa, which is Hershey's HSY, has been a remarkable stock.
I was just going to ask a quick question here or bring it to people's attention. On that price of coffee, you know, that price of coffee in the last 10 years has been over 300 at one point and over 200 at one point. And it hit a low recently of around 85 in the December contract. And I think today it's at about 104. So in the echelon of price, you're not sniffing around it at the highest level by any means.
And that's true. It's definitely a low price.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen, of course, is very simple. They take those contracts, they take delivery, they store them, and they basically take supply off the market. And as I said before, we see the same pattern in cocoa, coffee, sugar, and now cotton, as well as Norman mentioned. And that's a very significant long-term predictor. Now, the most important thing is this. In every one of those markets, the small trader remains neutral to negative. Take that combination, and it's a big winning combination, intermediate to long-term.
Yeah, and cotton prices, in the last 10 years, they've been over 200, and then they were about 100 for a few times. And now they're trading at around 65 with, I guess the lows are around 55 over the last 4 or 5 years. So they are trying to find a bid down here. And you're seeing indications that it might be finding one, huh?
Absolutely. And let's take one more thing into consideration. Although I'm not a fundamentalist and I don't look at fundamentals, consider that if it's true that we've got global warming and climate change and the world's not going to be here in 11 years, before that happens, commodity prices are going to go crazy because of weather. So that's a very important factor as well.
Okay. All right. We're going to come back to you for another group of stuff, but let's go over to Norm. Norm, the dollar indexed, my view, has been in a range of about 99 and 95. And about a month or so ago, it rolled over from 99.50 and it's down 97. So it's kind of smack in the middle. It on Friday was under the 50-day and the 200-day. So they haven't inverted to the downside, but the market traded through the 50 and 200-day on the dollar index. So how do you see that a little bit of a downturn in the dollar index affecting the yen?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, of course, the dollar index is just a basket of all of these currencies, all the major currencies. And of course, just by definition, movement is based on the elements.
Say, Norm, is it a basket or a waste basket?
Yeah.
Or a
spittoon. They're all made out of paper, right?
That's right.
It's all a spittoon. But I think the chart is still a bit bearish in the dollar index. Although I've learned a long time ago not to look at other markets when you're trading the market that you're trading.
Right.
For years I'd grab onto some silver because gold just took off.
Right.
That kind of thing, and you're much better.
And then the ratio goes the other way. Yeah.
Well, you're just much better off. There are there's more than just one element, one and usually major factor that's affecting the market. And like Jake, I'm not a fundamentalist. I mean, I can tell myself stories, but in the end, I'm looking at what the numbers are telling me. And in the Japanese yen, one particular, it seems to go opposite to some degree the movement of the stock market. So again, as a guy that's been waiting for a correction, I always have my eye on whether, it's an interesting way to play a correction in the stock market, looking at going long the Japanese yen. I think you've seen association there, especially recently. Well, we're coming right now. We've got a downward channel since August and September, a double top formed in the Japanese yen on the daily chart. We've been coming down ever since in a nice, consistent channel. Now we're approaching 91 cents. Now, I trade the futures contract. You may have to flip this over, your chart over, if you're trading Forex. But as it approaches this, we're at 92.2, 92.3 right now.
Right.
As it comes to that 91 area right below that. Now, we broke 92 last week, I believe on Wednesday, and we came roaring back. That was the pattern. That break and then the roaring back got me thinking that this could be an area where we could turn around. So I've been looking at some of the lower time frames, the 4 hour time frames and so on, to give me some sort of a signal to go long. So I'm I like this. I like the potential of the market on the long side. I like the fact that we're coming against the yearly lows at this 91 level. I just like a lot of things, and we haven't really oversold, which which means we're showing some strength near the bottom from an RSI standpoint. So I kind of like that too. Again, you got to be patient and wait for the signal. But
it looks like a close above 93 would be really constructive, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I like to find spots before that. By the time you get there, you think about all that you left behind.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not a great way to think for trades. But if you go to a lower time frame and you have more reasons than just to buy the breakout of Thursday's high,
yeah,
then you may be able to start layering in. I mean, the contract is relatively small for a futures contract,
right?
And so you can take a risk on some of the shorter time frames while you're as long as you get at least a neutral situation in the daily. So I'm liking this market. I think.
And your thought is also that at this point you wouldn't want to see it under 92 again?
No, I think, again, 91 is really the number.
Okay.
Breaking 92 would be consistent with what's been going on.
Right.
But that tail in Wednesday's action and the
right.
shows that there are some people that are thinking like me, whether they've spent yeah. all their shekels or not, I don't know. But again, it's a market that I've got my eye on. I think it has real potential if it does break that channel and start moving higher.
Yeah. Okay. What about the metals? Jake, you had an opinion or a feeling towards platinum. So let's take a look at platinum and see what it looks like there. And if you want to,
Five years ago, we went bullish on palladium, indicating it would go to new all-time highs. That has happened and exceeded our target. Platinum and palladium are fundamentally related, not directly. But platinum is the most undervalued metal that we've got. So platinum and copper, both very great opportunities. Now, of course, for many years, platinum sold at a significant premium to gold. Now it's at a significant discount to gold. So if you're looking for value, look at platinum. Now, for the first time in a long time, about 6 months ago, commercials actually went long platinum, which is a significant development because they did it right at the low. They didn't buy a lot, but it's significant because it hasn't happened in a long time. So if someone's looking for intermediate to long-term value, accumulate platinum coins, ingots, bullion, ETFs, or futures, if you like.
I got you.
Can I ask Jake a question on the platinum? Because you can't help but watch what it's been doing. And of course, its discount to gold still freaks me out. But I'm wondering, it used to be a bisexual market where you had the precious metals component and you had the industrial component in the form of catalytic converters and other things for platinum, but mostly the catalytic converters. What is replacing? I mean, is this move that you anticipate? And I know you don't watch the fundamentals, but do you believe that we're talking about some industrial replacement for the metal, or is it strictly going to be a precious metal move?
Now, Norm, I have to say I've never heard the term bisexual applied to the market. I think that's a new frontier.
I had to get back in my chair after that one.
It's a new frontier.
Yes, it is.
I'm glad you're not the CFO of McDonald's. You might get fired.
That's
so
right.
the bottom line is that, yes, it's a replacement. There's a lot of palladium being used in catalytic converters and industrial needs, and platinum in a larger quantity is a great substitute. I don't know the fundamentals, but I do know the ratios. This is the lowest ratio we have ever had in the history of platinum versus gold. That doesn't mean you run in and buy it, but you wait for a trigger. So we have the setup, which is the lowest ratio in history. You've got a cyclical low in that relationship, which is due right now. And so you're waiting for a trigger. And we did have that weekly trigger technically on our indicators to buy platinum for the intermediate to longer term. And in terms of indicators, my best indicator is momentum. I look at momentum versus price. They need to be moving together. If they're not moving together, you've got a setup or change in direction.
Mm. On the the more highly traded metals, gold and silver, Jake, we had pullbacks in gold to 1465 last month and silver to 17. And now they've tried to get back on their horses. Do you have a feeling that the correcting digesting of the big move in both markets is over and you could use those lows from last month as some type of a floor? Or do you think there's more probing on the downside possibly?
I think the intermediate term correction is over. Short term correction is not over yet. So if someone's interested in buy and hold on silver and gold, their opportunity was about a week ago, as we've been saying.
Yeah.
So this move is not over yet. I think we will make new all-time highs in gold over the next 6 months to a year. Not so sure about new all-time highs in silver, but the one that's a sleeper in addition to platinum is copper.
Mm. Yeah.
Copper usually tends to move higher in December. So we're shaping up for that low developing over the next couple of weeks. Get ready to buy copper. We see some strengths today in copper mining stocks like Rio Tinto, BHP. Those are good intermediate term investments and they pay nice dividends as well.
Mm. Yeah, in 2019, people underestimated the weakness that the economies around the world were going to have. And is it possible that for 2020, they're underestimating the growth and inflation that might come into the picture?
Oh, I think definitely. Yeah. Most people have no idea what inflation is because they weren't even born then. So just right. Be careful.
Yeah, because they're acting as if the inflation will never come back. Turning towards, and I was looking at the copper, and it seems like this 270 level, getting through that would be pretty darn constructive. Huh?
Absolutely. And don't forget, you know, this is a really great dividend play. Southern Peru Copper, as I said before, BHP, Rio Tinto, even FCX is not a great dividend play, but it's a cheap stock, and you can definitely look at that one as well.
Since we're talking about inflation and how everyone bets one way and then they find out they should be betting the other way, let's talk a little bit about treasury bonds, because again, last year at this time, they were talking about 3.25, and we're on our way to 4 on the 10-year, and the Fed's going to be hiking in 2019, and that couldn't have been more wrong if you put a blindfold on. Now, everyone's betting for rates to be down, maybe go down to 0, no inflation, very little growth, and so as far as treasuries are concerned, do you see any opportunity that yields may go the other way?
Toward the end of this year, beginning of next year, we make a cyclical low on bonds, notes, and interest rates in general. In terms of the really big cycles, the real estate cycle, which is about 17 years from low to low, we're due for a top in 2020 to 2021. So this whole thing's coming to a great big head. The confluence between interest rates, real estate, economies, the biggest test ever for Keynesian economics. So we're looking for some turbulent times. And during that period of time, yes, we will see interest rates bottom and start to move sharply higher. So be prepared. Lock in those rates now while you can, those low rates on mortgages.
And it'll be interesting to see when we have the refi boom that's probably happening right as we speak. And then you combine that to valuations that have been jacked up because prices have gone up. You know, California real estate's in somewhere near Mars or Venus. And if you did have a pullback in price and everyone's reloaded on their refi, it could have some default risk at that point too.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Most of the time we don't realize that something's happening because we're right in the middle of it. And it's only afterwards with 2020 hindsight we say, oh yeah, now I see what was happening. Well, I live in California in the mountains. I just recently put a very small, it's called a casita, which is a little, 300 square foot living space. It's just got a bedroom, no bathroom, nice roof, very beautiful view of the ocean. And someone wants to rent that from me for $1,200 a month. Give me a break. Something's afoot. Something's definitely, it doesn't even have a bathroom. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, that's the story of California real estate. Well,
with a bathroom.
Norm,
I think it would be at least $1,250 with a bathroom.
We could probably get $2,000 with a bathroom.
He could do one of those French bathrooms that just, have a hole there. You know what I mean?
There you go.
All right. Well, anyway, moving forward here, I think Norm has some input on this. And Jake, I'm sure you do as well on the grain area. Norm, do you have anything you're looking at on the grain that might be of interest?
You know, I have not. I did look at the wheat, but never got in on the wheat because it looks like it wants to be a strong market. Yeah. As we've had a nice upward move, we didn't take out the highs earlier in the year, but we're having a nice soft correction now, about 50% from its last from the trend low to the high, this low that occurred around the 20th of last month, and about 5-6 days later we reached the interim high that we're dealing with now. Now 2 weeks later we've corrected 50% of that. Mm-hmm. This is a market that it's like all the grain seems to depend on what's going to happen with China and the crops in Brazil when it comes to some of these soybeans and some of these other crops. But I would have to say that this I always have in the back of my head with what Jake was talking about with the weather. I mean, I'm sitting here in South Florida and it is November 4th and the high is going to be 85 degrees and that's lower than it was all of last week. It's starting to cool off. And, it's like a full month, 6 weeks different than last year. And so I just think that as we, we're seeing bees die and, monarch butterflies die and all of these things that are all about the ecosystem. It has me looking to the long side of these things. So I just think short term, I think we may have some upward movement here. But in general, again, it's one of those long-term movements higher in all of these commodity prices.
The commitment of traders is a focus point in part for you, Jake. Is there any read coming out of commitment in traders on the grains?
Oh, yeah. A couple of months ago when I was on the show here, I mentioned soybean oil as a great trade, and it has really gone bananas. So here's what's happening. It's the usual situation, no offense intended. The farmer gets screwed, and the big companies make the money. Mm-hmm. So who's buying all this grain? Archer Daniels Midland, Bungie Grain, the Andersons, cheap stocks, pay dividends. Long term, that's where you want to look at right now.
Mosaic at all? Something like that?
Mosaic or the ETF DBA, which is the agriculture ETF. Yes.
But the sector of agriculture, you're feeling has a reasonably good future.
Oh, yeah. Intermediate to long term.
Yeah. And the prices, they seem to have bottomed out earlier this year, right?
Correct.
Because they've had reasonable movements there.
You know, we never talk marijuana stocks. Probably sometime we should.
Well, I think we should do it right now because I know that Norm is very keen on this company that's over here in Las Vegas, MedMen. And so why don't we start out with Norm talking a little bit more about MedMen, and then that's the real estate part of the issue, and then maybe Jake can go into some others.
Well, there are a number of them, but I concentrated on MedMen because they were doing things similar to the way McDonald's did things. When they don't lease, they purchase the land and then they lease from themselves, so to speak, and they've got a lot of real estate out there in a whole arena that's, if the Democrats were to get in, things would even be faster. But even if they don't, the number of states that are approving legal marijuana for recreational purposes is just continues to pump this. They're still figuring out how to make the money. I mean, once the banks get off the schneid with allowing the FDIC to make an exception for this, or it's a class one drug. As long as if they take that off, all of a sudden people can operate businesses the way they should. There's a lot of things that can open up and accelerate the whole sector. So again, I've got my eye on it. MedMen is a company that has they've all taken it in the shorts in the last year, but MedMen probably worse than all of them. And
so what you're saying is like McDonald's owns the building or the land, and then the franchisee leases it from them? Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, that's how I understand it.
And obviously you're not an expert in this company, but this is what your understanding is. And that's correct. That they have some kind of ownership in the actual place where they're going to do the business, and then they're going to get lease money from those people who are doing the business. Is that the general theory?
Yeah, I mean, when I was so interested in the way they were doing business that I visited their store in Las Vegas.
Sure.
And it's like going into an Apple store.
Oh, yes.
It's amazing. It's the first time I've been. Maybe they're all like that, but...
They're regulated and there are things they have to do, and they're generally set up fairly much like that. Jake, what are you seeing in the area of marijuana stocks?
I think it was a classic case of a lot of sizzle.
Yeah.
And now we're waiting for the question, where's the beef?
Right.
The indicators technically all look pretty bad on marijuana stocks, which is fine. They need to go lower first, just like Uber and Lyft did. Then, some point in the next 6 months to a year, we'll have an opportunity to buy them. Right now, I'm not interested.
What about Canada versus U.S.? Any opinion there?
Canada, I think, is in much better shape. So I would definitely look at the Canadian ones as opposed to U.S. right now.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I am going to be very fair here as much as I can be when we have two guys who want to talk commodities. I'm going to be very fair, bring Eric back on if Eric's still with us.
Oh, I'm alive.
Okay.
And, I'm enjoying all the chatter. I mean,
even though you might not be doing this, it's an interesting conversation for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've traded thousands of commodity contracts over the years. So yeah, I know exactly what you guys are chatting about, and so it's all good stuff.
Yeah, let's bring it around to what you're doing over there and give an opportunity to, again, a little bit about yourself again, and then also a little bit about what people can do when they go over to you and what you're kind of bringing to the table for them of value.
Right. Well, let's put it this way. Over the years, we had lots of people trading options with us. And I think a lot of people were misguided, misdirected. Maybe they were sold a faulty bill of goods, you know, from whomever about how easy it is to trade options and how you can make all these huge returns. And while there is some small grain of truth to that, because, you know, once in a while, if you put on an option position and you're long and the market moves in your favor in a big enough way and you get out at the right time, then the leverage is enormous. But however, that's a very low probability occurrence. So, you know, we really just flip that over upside down. And instead of being the entity that is always buying options and watching them expire, you know, why not be the ones that sell the options and collect the premium, sort of take the position that the insurance company would. So that's what we did. But it's very difficult. It's very confusing. It's very complex. Let's say you are bullish on the S&P 500, you know, and you're looking at the E-mini S&P futures contract as your vehicle. And now you think, okay, I'm going to look at some options. You pull up a screen and there's a big option chain and a matrix of quite literally thousands of different possible combinations of options to trade and spreads and different ways to build a spread. And, you know, it's very, very confusing for someone. So we kind of created a platform that does all that work for the person. All they have to do is determine if they're bullish or bearish or neutral. And then our algorithm will generate specific trades for those biases. And they're all pre-populated with the strike prices, with the pricing, which ones to buy, which ones to sell, you know, which expiration we're looking at. And then all you do is just accept it or not. And then the trade gets executed by us. So once that's done, if you want to follow along with the trade, of course, which you would, it's a miserable, miserable experience to try to do that looking at your brokerage statement. If you're trading, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-legged spreads, and you have a bunch going on at different times and different expirations and different strikes, as Jake just said, it's not possible. You cannot do it. And it's a big barrier, I think, to people being able to do this. So what we've done is we've just built that into our own platform called ThetaTrader. It automatically will then monitor your position for you. It presents it to you in a user-friendly manner, and then it can automatically close out your position for you when it reaches too much risk or enough profit. And so that's what we've done. You can also receive trade alerts on your handheld device, and they're one touch. And what I mean by that is typically a trade alert is something you get, and then you have to log into some platform somewhere and then transpose all that information back into the platform. Doesn't do that. Doesn't work that way with us. Everything's integrated with our service. So you just touch the green accept button, and then we transmit the order for you. And then ThetaTrader will then track the trade for you. So that's what we do. You can back test. We have a simulator as well. And that's really the gist of what we do. We make something complex very, very simple.
Yeah, I think that brings an awful lot to the table. And at the end here in about a minute or two, you can give your contact information out and people can take it to the next step and find out more about it and see if it's right for them.
Fantastic.
Yeah. One last thing for Norm and Jake. We didn't talk about crude oil. My feeling has been is with this Aramco deal coming up that it's possible they may want to try to push the prices a bit higher so they can get more people to bite the apple. You know, they are in total talking about a $2 trillion offering, but they're also saying the valuation of this company is very hard because you're almost buying a country, not a stock. So anyway, we're at $57 on crude. Jake, or Norm, any input on what you guys feel about the price of crude?
Well, I mean, for me, if you don't look at the news, it's a fairly consistent sideways type market between, you know, the $50 and $60 for the last half of the year since June. And, you know, we're right in the middle of that space right now. And I don't see a reason to go one way or another. It's a market you want to watch, but the momentum indicators are not giving me much of anything unless Jake sees something I don't. I just don't know. I mean, I think when it does give us a new direction, it's something that's going to have some legs. But which way it'll go, I don't know. I can't tell by the chart for me, at least the way I read it.
Is the commitment of traders telling us anything, Jake?
Yeah, they're not buying. They have no interest in the market.
Yeah.
Now, it's very different in natural gas. That market has definitely bottomed. It's doing some beautiful things. In crude oil, we're not due to bottom the cyclical pattern until the first quarter of 2020. So I would hold off on that. Even if they try to get the price higher, it's going to be a trick.
Yeah. And the natural gas at 281 for December has turned the corner off of the 240 area. But I think historically, it's a fairly low price, isn't it?
Correct.
And the last 10 years, it's been above 6. It's been up to 5, even like last year, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Could I say one thing about options?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people watch CNBC and they see the two brothers on CNBC saying, well, we know what to do. We're buying these options and all the rest of that stuff. And then we got them at 50 cents an hour, $6. That happened in 24 hours. You know, I think they need to be more transparent about what they do, because a lot of times they will tell you where they're getting in, but they never tell you what the outcome was. So just got to be careful. I like the approach of having everything on one platform where you can look at everything, run some simulations, figure all the complex parts out, because I just can't get beyond that myself without that additional software that we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just because an option's at 50 cents doesn't mean it's cheap.
Exactly.
all right. Well, anyway, we're coming right up to the top of the hour. Let's start out with Eric. And Eric, just let the people know how to get a hold of you. And also, if there's any special offers, this is the time to send those out.
Right. Well, certainly, just go to our website at altavest.com, altavest.com. You'll see our ThetaTrader platform there, and you can click through, and then we offer a free test drive, so you can get on board for, give you a couple months if you'd like to play with the platform, receive our trade alerts, run some simulations, but we make it very, very easy. It can really just take minutes a day, and you don't have to be glued to your screen, and there's a lot of margin of error in the option spreads we're trading, so it's not something that's like I said, going to occupy all your time, and it's not high velocity trading, meaning we're not day trading. You're not going to be trading every day. You might be looking at 1 to 2 trades a week, and then you just look for Theta Decay to work its magic and allow Theta Trader to close out those trades for you. So that's what I would suggest.
Okay, that sounds great. And Norm, with the Disciplined Trader, how can people get a hold of you? And is there anything that you're offering out there?
Well, I do want to just give a plug to Eric. You know, I ran a very large options organization in the 1980s when there weren't any exchange traded options. And you know, being on the selling side of options, being a broker in that, and then being a vice president of a company that instructed brokers, people fall into the trap of buying puts and buying calls, believing that their risk is limited and their opportunity is endless. And that's very attractive to people. All I can lose is every dollar I put in, but no more. And that's usually what happens if you play the dreamy game of buying puts and buying calls without looking at them in combination and selling. Now, Eric's explanation of something simple didn't sound so simple to me, so I didn't want anybody confused. Eric simplifies this stuff. So if you have interest in options, you know, he's got a process that really works, and that's what you need. You need somebody to help you out. As far as for me, we just started a high-end coaching program for accounts of 25,000 and up. Otherwise, it wouldn't be sensible really to be part of our coaching. And it's really a two-on-one coaching. My wife, Tisha, who's our subconscious trainer, and Tisha, Jake knows her very well, and I really two-on-one coaching you, not only in the way you construct your trading plan, but mostly on the mental and emotional issues of trading. And, you know, we turn around the trading habits, the poor ones, and emphasize the positive trading aspects of positive trading habits that you have. And we use some very cutting edge techniques that, you know, used to be when you work with the mind, it was all out in the ozone. Well, there's some proven techniques now that make it possible to change the way you think, and therefore the way you approach the market and the way you trade, and therefore your success in trading. So I want to open that up to people. If you're interested in that, it's kind of a private thing, but we're taking new clients in shows like this. If you want to just go to thedisciplinedtrader.com, find the about area, and you'll find a place where you can text me, thedisciplinedtrader.com, and just say you're interested, and I'll give you the details on it.
Sounds great. And Jake, again, how can people get a hold of you over at tradefutures.com, and what kind of an offering do you have for people right now?
So it's trade-futures.com or jakebernstein.com. You know, some guys go bowling, some guys go fishing. I get back surgery, and I write books. So I have a new book out. It's called My 52 Years of Trading, The 27 Greatest Lessons. It's being issued as a serial book, so you get 2 chapters a month. It's $99 for the entire process that runs 10 months. It's at the website, so that's my offering. Nice. It's a great book, and really enjoying it, and that's what I got today.
Great. All right, well, I think everyone can get additional information off all 3 of you guys that'd be of value to them, and then they could determine after they see everything what fits and what doesn't fit to their portfolio. I'm Jim Kenny. I do have a weekly letter that I send out updating all the different markets and my my views and my opinions on what I see. So if you'd like to get that, just simply email me at option, O-P-T-I-O-N, professor, P-R-O-F-E-S-S-O-R, at gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to put you on the list and keep you updated. Right now, I'm going to turn it back over to David. I think we had a great show, lots of information, and thanks a lot, everybody, for being here.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, everybody. It's really great.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows, including this one, as soon as I can get the archive posted. And be sure to join us tomorrow for Analyze Your Trade. That'll be the 101st episode. So Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Matt Buckley will be back. So it's been a few weeks since he's been on, so it'll be great to have him back. And Jim will be moderating again. And you can get access to that by going to timingresearch.com/live. And
thanks, David,
for the live show there. And just want to thank my guests again for today. Eric Gebhardt of AltaVest.com, Jake Bernstein of Trade-Futures.com, Norman Hallett of TheDisciplinedTrader.com, and Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.